Hey guys, welcome back to our weekly podcast, Morningstar Men's Ministry. Recorded our regular Saturday life study. This one was recorded with in conjunction with our summer breakfast that took place on the 8th of August, and the theme for the morning was keeping your most important teams together. So without any further introduction, the talk pretty much explains itself. I think you're going to find some very helpful pointers here. This is another one of those that I'd recommend that if you're driving, maybe you grab some tablet and a pencil so that you could jot some notes down, or maybe you plan to listen to this a couple of times so you can take some notes on a couple of things that you might find helpful for your future understanding of keeping your own most important teams together. I looked at the size of the handout that I was going to be talking from, and I thought to myself, that's crazy. Why would I give anybody 6 pages of information? And then I thought, well, maybe somebody would want to take notes, and so if I don't give you anything to write on, then you'll have no way to capture the one idea that you want to remember. So for the benefit of most of you, you can just ignore the 5.5 pages of stuff that's there that you might not ever look at again. Although you might. But it gives you a nice capture place for the one or two ideas that you'd like to take away from the morning. So, I have a few pens, and I'll say a few pens left up here if anyone needs a writing instrument. Does anybody need a pen? Okay, now if you're a regular here, you would think that you would come prepared with your own pen.
I'll walk around with it. I gave mine away.
Oh, a benevolent soul. All right, so I guess Chris is going to get some more pens. So our topic for the morning, keeping your most important teams together. It's locked. Okay, well, Chris won't be getting any pens. So the first object lesson of the morning is come prepared if you want to have something to take notes with. Keeping your most important teams together. So give yourself a moment before we begin to think about what teams you might be part of. Now, what are some of the questions that arise as soon as we pose that statement? Keeping your most important teams together. What do you think are some of the important questions that you might have relative to that statement? Keeping your most important teams together. What else? What's that? Okay, so I need time. I believe the first question that we need to ask is, what exactly is a team? What distinguishes a team and makes it unique from any other collection or agglomeration of people? So what is a team is a really important question. Well, here's another one then. Are there important and lesser important teams? So think of everything that you're affiliated with. Do you prioritize them? Well, you do without thinking about it. There's certain things that you give more attention, more of your time, more of your energy, more of your passion to than to other things. So you've already prioritized. Certain things are more important to you than others. But do you do that consciously, or do you feel forced into it or coerced into it? Have you specifically and intentionally made conscious choices about where you will place the most energy and resources of your life? Okay, so then which teams are you a part of is obviously one of those questions. Here's a bigger one. Which teams are you responsible for? So in the broader sense, we could say, let's say, and we're going to see this in a minute, our entire country is sort of a loosely connected team. How many of you feel responsible for your country? Right? I saw one hand go up. A little bit. Well, there's two hands go up. Oh, all right, now we're feeling guilt inducement to raise our hands here. It's okay. Most of us really don't genuinely feel that we are responsible for the inner workings of our country and how it functions week by week or day by day. But other areas where you do feel that if you step back, things would not go so well? Or maybe more importantly, are there areas where you should be involved and maybe right now you're disengaged? Are there teams that depend on you, but you've chosen or were unaware of the fact that you had a responsibility to them? Two more questions. If I'm going to say keeping the most important teams together, is it possible that good teams unravel? Have you ever been part of something that was important, but it fell apart? And sometimes we sit there and we say, I don't understand. I don't know what happened. Why did this thing that was so good for so long fall apart? And then obviously we want to know, well, if teams can fall apart, how do we keep them together? What's the glue that holds good, cohesive teams together? All right, so before we move on, here's a statement that I want to make about all of us. I think we want to do our best. Most of the time, we don't wake up in the morning and think, I want to be ordinary. I want to be mediocre. I would like to live the rest of my life at average or below average status. Is that true for you? Is there something that you would like to be great at? Is there something that you would like to be very good at? Well then, why is it that we aren't? I mean, when surveys are done, and we've all seen these surveys, right? When you survey 100 people and ask them, who do they think they are above average or below average drivers, right? 70% of people believe themselves to be above average drivers. Now, we know that's not possible. So people think of themselves as above average at times when they're really not. But why is it that excellence is so wanting? When you look around you, do you see excellence in most things or do you see ordinariness in most things? What's that? You do, don't you? You'll leave here today and you'll go out and you'll buy food somewhere. You'll get service somewhere. You'll get your car worked on. You'll get a number of other things where you will depend on other teams. And it is rare that you will leave that experience and say, wow. Wouldn't you like to be a part of something that made someone say, wow? Well then, what is it that makes us, who want to do great, do only ordinary? And you can see the list in front of you. We're flat out exhausted. Have you ever tried to give your best when there was nothing left in the tank to give? How many of you are here this morning and you're feeling the drain and the fatigue of life? Okay, how many of you just don't want to put your hands up even when you know it's true about you? I was at a thing yesterday where the woman finally had to ask somebody, after asking people to raise their hands again and again, and nobody would seem to raise their hands and participate, and she finally asked the question, how many people can raise their hands? And after everybody raised their hands, then she was finally able to get, okay, now that we know that you can raise your hand, we can get some participation. Well, we're just too busy. Why are we too busy? Because we're distracted by so many things. You've heard me say this before, but we are great accumulators, but we're not so good at cleaning the closets of our lives. We pick up responsibilities, we pick up things that we're interested in. We collect stuff, but we don't know how to ever have a yard sale in our life. How many of you know that to be true in your own life right now? You're carrying stuff, or trying to maintain stuff, or trying to do stuff that you're only partially, half-heartedly committed to. At this point, you can't even remember why you started doing it or why you bought the thing or why you wanted to do the thing to begin with, but now it's something that's a little bit part of your routine. And maybe there's a thing connected with it. I don't know, some sporting thing or some other thing. And once in a while you walk by it and it reminds you of the fact that you own it and you should do something with it, and so now you feel guilty if you don't use it. But you don't really want to sell it because you know you wouldn't get as much money for it as you paid for it. And so it's just there. So one of the reasons why we never achieve excellence at anything is because we dabble in everything. Here's another reason why. Have you ever felt under-challenged in a team that you participate in? We'll call it bored. Do you know where most people's sweet spot is when it comes to that? There's a delicate tension that exists between... it's the board. You're going to be responsible for keeping the board upright this morning. So on the one side over here, and for those of you in the back, I'm kind of sorry, you're not going to be able to see this. Over here is, I know how to do this so well I could do it in my sleep. Over here is, I've never done this in my life before. And somewhere in the middle, where there's a little bit of, I kind of think I know how to do this, but I'm not quite sure I know how to do this, is where we're at our best. Think of it like fear. If you're a little nervous, what does that make you? It makes you extremely focused. But if you're scared to death, it paralyzes you. Somewhere in between, I have no fear, I have no thought, I just do this almost in my sleep, somewhere between that on the one end of the continuum, and I'm so scared that I'm afraid to even start this on the other end. Between there is a delicate tension that exists where you do your best and you feel challenged and you come into work or you go home to your family or you go to whatever it is every day and you look forward to going there. The fear of failure. I think a lot of people don't start something because they're afraid to fail at it, because we have a story that we tell ourselves about failure. What's the story that we all tell ourselves about failure that keeps us from starting something? It's okay to be the first one to participate, really. You won't fail. Just saying something will mean that you have not failed here. Why are we so afraid of failure? Anybody?
Society looks down on it.
Okay. We're afraid of what other people will think if we fail. It is so much safer for some of us to do nothing than to do something, and we know this why. Here's what we do. We impose our own motives on other people, and we know that we've laughed at other people in the past who have failed, so what do we assume other people are going to do if we fail? The exact same thing. Right, so we impose on all of humanity the very motivation that we have because we've laughed at somebody in the past or we felt awkward because of failure. We assume everybody's going to laugh at us. We're heading in a direction that maybe by now you start to sense. There comes a point where if you want to be part of something great, you're going to have to just not care much about what other people think. Okay, we fear fear and ridicule and criticism for attempting something that stretches others. Think of a team that you're part of. Think of your family. Here's a great one. Have you ever been inspired to do something great for your family or in your family? And the rest of the family isn't buying in? What's the usual response? There's nobody that can roll their eyes like your kids. Right? There's nobody that can look on with a certain degree of contempt and disgust, and really, are we going to do this again? Like your kids. And I know we think that we're impermeable and that kind of stuff can't influence us, but I believe it does. So it's not just that we're scared of our own failures, we're scared of the ridicule that's going to come our way if we try to do something great and it forces other people to go along with us. And so we not only settle for ordinary in our own lives, but because we're fearful of what other people think, we consign others to ordinary as well. Because we never stretch them beyond where they are. A couple of other ones. We actually don't know what great looks like. We've never seen great. We don't understand how to paint a picture of what great looks like in something. And so we don't even know what to aspire to. See, if you were raised in a family where there was a lot of great things happening, or if you've been part of a business team where great things were done, then you have an understanding of what great looks like. But if you've experienced nothing but ordinary all your life, you don't even know what great looks like. So you don't even have anything to shoot for. Here's another one. I don't know how. I think I know what greatness looks like. I'd even be willing to take the risk to reach out for greatness, but I don't know the first step. I've never done great before. I've never even experimented with great before. I've never even failed at trying to be great before. Therefore, I don't know what step to take next. Have you ever been stuck there? I'd like to move, but I don't know which way to go. And because I don't know which way to go, what do? I say stuck. Finally, we've never felt anything that energizes or excites us, excites our passions. So just think about two or three teams that you're a part of right now. Maybe it's something at work. Maybe it's family. Maybe it's some other organization. Maybe it's the church. How about that? Maybe it's something that you're doing within this body of believers. Is there anything that really energizes and excites your passion? Because here's what happens. A guy like me stands up and asks you to get involved with something, and you get involved in it. Why do you get involved in it when I ask you to do it? Well, if you get involved in it. Why do we do that? Especially in a church. Well, here's one reason. Because we think that because I asked, it must be something that God wants you to do. And so you step out and you try to do it. I don't know you. I've made a general appeal. The fact that you feel guilted into it or compelled to do it doesn't mean that it was what you should do. We want only people who feel that they can be excellent at something to say, I want to be a part of this. Because excellence takes a price. Here it is on the top of the back of your first page. Decide what you want to be great at and whom you want to be great with. Decide the one or two things that you want to be great at and who you want to be great with. And that second part is just as important as the first. Do you want a great marriage? There's a real big price to be paid for that. If you want a great business, there's going to be a price to pay for that. If you want a great ministry, there's going to be a price to pay for that. And you know what? We only have so much stuff that we can pay a price for. And we've been led to believe that we need to, or we have to, or we can do a number of things and do them well. It's the myth of balance. And we all want to live balanced lives. What does a balanced life look like? Anybody? It's a little of this, and it's a little of that, and it's a little of the other thing. Have you ever seen anybody who does a little of everything that does anything phenomenally? Just think about that. The reason why we experience ordinary at almost everything in life is because everybody is trying to achieve that myth of balance where we do a little of everything. And you just can't. You and I need to decide what are the handful of things that we want to do so well that we're willing to let go of the other things that we might want to dabble in. Do you see why passion is important? Because if it doesn't excite me, I'm going to feel at the end of my life like I missed out on the best of life to do something else. There's one final thing before we move into the second part, which is answering the questions that were asked in the first part. And that is, who are you going to do this with? Who are the people in life that you are going to do this with? For the last few weeks, we've been looking at wisdom. We said that there's, among all the other things that we talked about, we said that there's two different types of wisdom. There's behavioral wisdom, which is wisdom to decide what's right in the moment. And then there's directional or destinational wisdom, which is the choices that we make about the direction that we're going to go for the rest of our lives. So behavioral wisdom keeps me safe in the moment. But directional wisdom defines where I'm going to go and who I'm going to become for all of my life. And we said that when I want good directional wisdom, I surround myself with scriptures and insights that will help to guide my behavior. But when I want good destinational income, I need to have friends. I need to have others that can inspire me. I need to have a group of people that remind me of who I am and what my purpose is, because I leak. And you do too. Do you ever get tired? Do you ever get flat out exhausted and you wonder, why am I doing this? Do you ever want to quit? One of the things that defines the people who stay in the game versus the people who don't is the relationships that they have, the people that they surround themselves with. This is one of the few scriptures we're going to look at this morning. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one can lift up his fellow, but woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Now, what's our tendency as men when we fail? What's our tendency as men when we succeed? See, when I succeed, I want to share my success with everyone. Why? Look at what I did. What do I do when I fail? I go away by myself because I don't want anyone to see that I'm failing. And yet, what does this scripture say? The time when I need someone right next to me is the time when I've fallen. So don't take this literally necessarily. Make it metaphorical. The time when my spirits are down, the time when my life is down, the time when I've just failed, that's the time when I need somebody alongside of me to help pick me up. And yet by our very nature, men tend to do it exactly the opposite. We surround ourselves with acquaintances when we succeed, and we go off and we nurse our wounds and our failures all by ourselves. If you want to excel at something, you're going to have to get those two flipped around. So I assume that you want the best for a couple of things. I'm counting on it. And so the questions we ask are, why is it that some teams rise and then sink? Why is it that some teams never rise? They never rise above ordinary. Some teams just continue on at a level of mediocrity forever. And you can see this in families too, where generation by generation there is just almost nothing. There is nothing that holds generation over generation over generation together. And then there's the few rare ones, where the few rare teams where something great happens and it lasts. One of the saddest things that we experience is something that happens and it's great, but it's only great for a little while and then it's gone. And in business, one of the things that I've learned personally is that you do your customers no service by exhausting your ability to do great. If you give all that you have and are great for 1 second and they come to rely on you, but you have sabotaged your future success, then what good was it? They can't rely on you but one time and one time only. We all want great teams that can be great teams over the long haul, because we all want to be able to rely on great things and great institutions over the long haul, not only for a decade or a generation. So our mission, if we choose to accept it, is to align ourselves with a handful of great teams that we can accept some responsibility for, that we can pour our passions into, that over the long haul, others can rely on them. We're going to totally change direction here for a moment. How many of you had a chance to watch a little of the debate the other night? Now, we're not going to go political. Okay? We're not. I watched just enough of it for a few minutes here and there. I honestly could not handle the times when Trump was on. And somebody would ask Trump a question, and Trump would start to answer, and the discomfort inside of me, I found myself almost being embarrassed with the fact that I couldn't handle the discomfort, and I had to flip the channel. And then I'd come back 5 minutes later hoping that Trump wasn't talking any longer. Why? Well, it's not that he didn't ever have any answers, but I was just nauseated by this single fact. Here was a man who, when he was confronted with a handful of failures that he had, he justified the failures and excused the failures rather than using that as a conversational point for the nation to say, you know what, you're right. In the past, I did this. But I think better of it now, and I realize it was a mistake. And I think because of this mistake, we should go in this direction. You see, one of the reasons why there should be great debates, political debates actually, is because it's the common dialogue that lets all of America see what are the important things and what are the possible solutions to those important difficulties that we face. But instead, you know what happens in most political debates? Everybody tries to trash the other one. Everybody tries to out-trash the other person. Well, there's an important lesson in all of this. It's a lesson for us, it's a lesson for anyone who leads a team. If you put your own needs in front of the needs of the people that you lead, in the end, the team is going to implode. When Donald Trump, and I'm not singling Donald Trump out for anything, and maybe you love Donald Trump, and that's good, and that's okay, but when Donald Trump puts his own image in front of the country that he claims that he wants to lead, when Donald Trump puts his own reputation and image ahead of a discourse on how the country could move ahead in a better way, then Donald Trump has showed me that he's not fit to lead only because he is willing to throw the whole country under the bus to preserve his own image. You and I want to be leaders, and we want to be led by people who are willing to say, yesterday I screwed up, but I think today we could do it better. They put the interest of the organization above themselves. Okay, and if you like Donald Trump right now, I apologize. All right, that's your one comment for the morning. You're flagged. All right. So I hope I got everybody's attention now. So now we're going to answer the question. So what is a team?
But I just make a point, you know, when you talked about your deciding on whether you become part of a team, the only thing I would say is that, as you said, you can be inundated with a lot of requests and things like that, but, you know, just reminds me of two years ago, I was asked to be part of a position, you know, part of a team, but I pray about it. You know, never say yes on the first, you know, never say always, but generally speaking, never say yes when you're first asked about that, but, you know, particularly if it's a large investment of time, as this one potentially is. Pray about it, and just take that time to do that.
There you go. Okay, so what is a team? And we're going to now start to explore why there are so few good teams. So a team, a group of people organized or united behind a common purpose. They're organized to achieve a purpose. That seems so simple, doesn't it? So look at your family. What's the purpose for your family? What's the purpose for the place you work at? Does anybody know? Somebody want to volunteer? What's the purpose for your company's existence, the place where you work?
Make money for the shareholders.
Okay.
Usually the purpose is multi-level. Like, you have... It's a business, ultimate purpose needs to be profitable or you won't be there. But you have some purpose, where our team is to outshine that team, or our purpose is with this one goal, part of 5 goals, part of 100 goals. So it's successes in various stages.
Okay.
Rather than one purpose.
So I'm going to push back. It is true. It is true that for a business, money's important, right? Let's look at money like food. Right? The business can't exist in the same way that you and I can't exist without food. Let me ask you something. Is your purpose to eat? It's probably not. So I look around the room. Most of you look like your purpose is not to eat. So there has to be more of a purpose, even to a business, than just to make money. So we're going to draw these three circles. You've probably seen these before. In the outer circle, and this is true of any organization, is the what we do. So what's your business do? What's your family do? What does the church do? What do we do? Let's talk about church. Something we all have in common. What does the church do? When you think of church, what do you think the church does? Okay, how do we do that? That's the next one. Then what we do? Let's take a coffee shop. What does a coffee shop do? Let's take Starbucks. What does Starbucks do? Sells coffee. That's the what. How do they do it? Do they have a model for how they do it? A plan for how they do it? You bet they do. It's very specific. It's very detailed. Does that capture their existence? There's a center one. And the center and most important is why we do what we do. See, until you can answer the why, until everyone on the team can answer the why, and believe in the why of what we do and how we do it, there is no real team that's going to stay united. Do you know the why of everything that you're involved in? Because until you can answer the why, you'll never throw yourself into it completely. So what is Starbucks' why? I singled them out because they're kind of easy and they're high profile. Does anybody know Starbucks' why? Apart from making money to benefit shareholders? Here's what they believe. Their model is, we believe that every human being needs what they call a third place. I assume most of us have heard of that. A third place is that place between work and home. That place where you go to decompress, the place where you go to associate and fellowship with other people. Every human being needs a third place, and they believe their mission is to profitably provide a third place for people to interact and meet. What is the why for the church? Why do we do? Why do we have a building? Why do we invite people in? Why do we do all this stuff that we do? Because we do a lot of stuff, but what is the ultimate why?
Lead people to Christ.
Lead people to Christ and into fellowship with Christ and each other because, and this is the second part, that's not enough. That's part of what we do. Leading people to Christ is part of the why, but it's also part of the what. What's the ultimate why? Why do we lead people to Christ? To have eternal life, and because we believe that every human being is incomplete until they are in proper fellowship with God and with others, and they can't be in proper fellowship with others until they're in proper fellowship with God. In other words, at its core, we believe that the best thing for every human being is to be in fellowship with Jesus Christ, and everything we do is centered around that why. And until we buy into a why, we just go through the motions of the what and the how. Have you ever been in an organization where you did the what and you knew the how, but you didn't really know the why? How long are you going to continue on? What do you feel like when you're told how, but you don't know why? Some of you work at a place like that every day. You should be able to explain how that feels. You want to elaborate?
Sure. You serve others with no objective at the end, so you feel like you've never achieved anything. You've never reached a point of excellence, or that excellence is defined for you, so you chase after an empty finish goal.
Did you hear the message behind the message that he says? Until everyone in an organization feels the significance of understanding and serving the why, they don't really feel like they're part of it. And you will never remain fully engaged in any team unless you can feel that you can completely buy into the why. Have you ever gone to work for a paycheck and little else? Have you ever not cared about the organization that you went to work for? Have you ever not even known why, apart from you assumed that they were just in it for the money? Has anyone ever sat down and explained, this is why we do what we do every day? All right. What teams are you responsible for? That's the next question that we really want to address carefully. What are the teams that you're responsible for? Because some teams you're just a member of. In some cases, you're predominantly going to be given the why. But what teams do you have some influence? And there's how we're going to define it. What teams do you have some influence in?
Family.
Certainly. Any others? A good one. Everybody hear what he said? Community. How many of you actually feel like you have a responsibility in your community? Okay. Anybody want to add anything else? Okay. All right. That's a good list, mostly because I'm out of room on the board. And because already, we got four things up there. Do you have any connection with each? Do you personally have any connection with all four of them? Yeah. Do you have any connection in your community? Are you in any way involved in your community? In other words, do you live in a community? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. Unless you live on a ranch in Wyoming, you live in community. Family, work, ministry? Yeah. How much more can be on your plate? Think about that. And so if we master these four in some way or another, and ministry doesn't need to be as narrowly defined as you might be thinking of it right now. Does the whole world need the gospel message? Yes. Does it matter how the world gets the gospel message? Probably not. And so ministry can be a lot more broadly defined than you might now be thinking of. Well, here's the thing. You know the Mission Impossible movies, right? How do they all start? I mean, there's an intro, and then what always happens that gets the thing going? Anybody? Your mission, should you choose to accept it. And what's the implication? There's going to be danger, there's going to be risk, but you could say no. And I think a lot of us have this fallback safeguard in our life. I can always say no. If it gets too risky, if it gets too hard, if it gets too dangerous, I can always say no. But what happened if someone, preferably you, closed the back door on no, and there was only one way to go, and that was forward? See, most of us have left ourselves an out. If family gets too tough, we leave ourselves an out. If work gets too tough, we don't leave ourselves an out in the sense that we don't just stop working. We just disengage intellectually. We leave our passion at home and we just go there to get a check and go home. Right? Some of you know this to be true. You've checked out of wherever it is that you work because you've left yourself a back door. Or ministry. And I hate to say this, but we see this a lot. I mean, people just, okay, this has gotten too hard. This is inconvenient. This conflicts with my schedule. I guess I can't do this anymore. Remember what we said earlier? We said that the ideal sweet spot that every human being needs is that point somewhere between, I have no idea what I'm doing, and this is so easy I can do it in my sleep. In other words, anything that is going to bring you reward and satisfaction is going to be difficult. Do you get that? And yet most people don't believe that. They're looking for the easy way out. We've been sold this bill of goods. We've talked about this before. The bill of goods that we've been sold in this country is that comfort is the ultimate goal. If I get this thing, if I have this thing, I can relax. What's the goal of almost every financial instrument that's sold to us? To make you money so that you can later on kick back with your barns full and eat, drink, and be merry and someday wither away and die in comfort. Is that not true? Think about how much money is spent advertising for financial instruments that will allow us to retire comfortably to our dream home where we will do what? Nothing. So why do teams explode or implode or just plain fall apart? And we'll say that there's two basic reasons. There's the internal and the external. So without looking at what's written down there already, if you haven't already read it, what do you suppose that the externals are? Okay, that's an internal one. What do you suppose is an external? External is the companies or the organizations or the teams interface with the rest of the world.
They
autonomy is a challenge. Teams fall apart for this reason. They lose sight of mission and purpose. They lose sight of mission and purpose, and once they lose sight of mission and purpose, the world that they interface with doesn't even know what they stand for anymore. So let me illustrate this in a really simple way. What is the purpose for a sports team? Have you ever wondered why people get everything that they want in life and they're miserable? Just stop and think about that for a minute, because sometimes we're given incorrect answers to why that's true. How is it that a person can get everything that they set their heart on in life and look back and be unhappy?
They got what they wanted, not what they needed.
That's part of it.
They need God out of everything, Jesus, so it's just material gain and they're never satisfied.
That's an answer to it, but it doesn't fully embrace it. Let me tell you why. Everyone needs to tell themselves a story for the purpose of what they do. When your goals don't contribute to a larger purpose that you're living for, what's the story that you have to tell yourself when you reach your goal? See, goals in life are not enough. A goal is a thing I reach, and once I've reached it, if it didn't contribute to something else, something bigger that I'm living for, then when I get to the end of it and I've reached the goal, what was the purpose to the goal? And it's why people always ask, I thought this was going to bring me satisfaction. What was the real purpose that they were living for? They revealed it. Satisfaction. They were living for satisfaction, and they thought that when they reached the goal, it would bring them satisfaction. The problem is that satisfaction is too shallow a goal. My personal satisfaction is too shallow a goal for me to invest the rest of my life in. Because how long does my satisfaction last? How long does yours last? The last good dinner you had? The last great movie you watched? How long does satisfaction is extremely elusive. You can spend the rest of your life chasing satisfaction. The reason that people get everything they want in life and are still miserable is because they have no story to tell themselves that is a compelling story as to why everything that they've done really mattered in life. Now, with that as a backdrop, what's the purpose for a sports team? Shallow as sports teams might be, but that's another story. That is it only to win championships? Create legacy, build character, destiny, and how about this?
Make money from the owners.
Paul Weibel, you shallow and cynical beast, you. How about to represent their city well? How about to inspire their city well? Have you ever noticed how crazy a city's fans get for the sports teams? I mean, not me. I'm not that kind of a guy, but you would never see me painted green or orange or whatever and all that stuff. But you see, that's the closest that they can come to a significant purpose for existence, is to unite and rally and bring pride to a city. Because all the rest is just intermediate goals. What happens when you've won one championship? How long does that satisfaction last? A week? 2 weeks? And then what? And then it's on to the next one, because you're only as good as your last win. Sometimes organizations fall apart because they don't have a long-term significant purpose for their existence except to make money. And sometimes families fall apart because they don't have a long-term significant purpose. What's the purpose for your family? Do you know it? Do your kids know it? Do they know why you stay united and why you personally, as one of the instrumental leaders in that family, stay in the hunt every day? And it's not enough for you to know. You better know. You better know what the purpose to your family is. You better know what the real core purposes for your business's existence are. You better know what your ministry exists for. But unless everyone else that is part of that team also knows, they go to work only being concerned with what and how. And what and how are not fuel enough to take anyone over the finish line. Okay, so that's the external part of why teams fall apart. What's the internal part? The internal part is we can't get along anymore. We don't like each other. Okay, so let's take it back to family. Do families fall apart because the social structure doesn't support conflict and conflict resolution? Do families fall apart because the pain of staying in the organization exceeds the pain of leaving it? Do you understand what I just asked you? Why do people who said I do and committed to lifelong marriage, why do they one day separate? In the end, because the pain of staying together and staying in this situation is greater than the pain of leaving. It's not because there's no pain to leaving. And so we need to have a compelling story for why we need to stay together, but then we also need to have structure that facilitates making sure that everyone matters in this relationship. That means if you are instrumental in leading the team, every single person there needs to know that they matter. They need to know why they matter. They need to know what they're doing matters to the extent that it's worth the sacrifice that they make. If you work for someone, have you ever felt that it was a sacrifice to show up at work? Have you ever left important things at home undone to show up at work? Have you ever put other things that you would like to do on hold to go to work? Why?
Prioritization, dedication.
Hopefully, when you get to a certain point, it's not just because you need the money. Hopefully, you get to a certain point where the reason that you go to work... Okay, let's take somebody like Paul. Why does Paul go to work? I have a feeling that if he doesn't go to work tomorrow, he's not going to go destitute. I just have that hunch about Paul that he's probably got a couple of dollars squirreled away somewhere. At least enough to last him a week. I'm not even going to make eye contact with him just in case he doesn't, but I suspect that he has more than enough for a week. So Paul no longer goes to work because he's afraid that the wolf is at the door and the wolf is going to bust down the door and take everything he has if he doesn't go to work. Paul goes to work because there's something significant and meaningful that he does that he feels makes a contribution. But he doesn't do that by himself. So every one of us goes to a place because we feel that it matters and we're willing to sacrifice because we feel that the sacrifice is worth it. But what happens when I go there and I can't get along with the people that I'm with there? That's part of the pain. And you and I, as leaders of any kind of team, part of our job is not just to drive purpose. It's to facilitate and develop the structures that will allow the team members to get along with each other and help each other and support each other. So if I fail to build something the equivalent of family in every team, the team is destined to fall apart. And I say it's a system because you know what? Once in a while, by chance, you get the right people in the room and they all get along. You ever met somebody at a party and you just hit it off? I'm getting blank stares. Does anything that I have said for the last 10 minutes make any sense? Have you ever gone to a party and there's someone that you just really hit it off with? Probably. That was just random. But have you ever built a family where people, even though they didn't always agree, they committed and covenanted to get along and work out their differences? See, that's a system and a structure that you have built. One is an accident and a happenstance. Dave and I meet at a party we've never met before. We get along. We hit it off great. We share an interest in whatever it is we share an interest in. I don't know. We were born on the same day. Whatever it is. We have something in common. That just happened. But for Dave and I and everyone else at his table and the next table back, for all of us over a 20-year period to stay committed to a ministry endeavor or something is going to take a lot more than that. It's going to take a commitment on the part of the team leaders to create a structure that allows conflicts to be resolved, people to feel important, people's individual passions to rise to the surface so that they can make a difference. And none of that happens by accident. And that's why a lot of teams fall apart. couple of final points. I promised I'd get you out of here. I'm already over budget. I can never keep anything on time. How do we keep important teams together? So I put a list here of the things that most teams do. We organize, we practice, we learn together. When's the last time you did any actual learning with your team? Even a family. They play together. They celebrate together and they mourn together. So we can come back to a sports team and we can see all these in a sports team. What does mourning look like in a sports team? It's the locker room scene after they lost the big game. And what does it feel like there? Yeah, there's some silence. There's some aloneness. But they all feel the pain together and they share the pain together. When your team is hurting, you need to be the curator of the mourning. Don't let it happen by chance. Help it to occur intentionally. And the same with celebration. Actually, that's one of the things that we do pretty well at this church, is we celebrate together pretty well. John and Teresa plan times when we can celebrate who we are and what we are and what we've done, because celebration matters. Sometimes you got to take a day off and look back and say, wow, we've done great. Celebration matters. We practice together. I mean, we just come together and we go through the motions of doing things until we get good at them. And this first one, the organizing part. This is the quiet part that the leader does. This is the intentional part of, what do I want this team to look like? What are the things that this team needs? How can I make sure that these connections happen? Now, with all that said, and I'm going to wrap this up, do you understand why so few teams achieve excellence and do it for any length of time? This is extremely hard work. And so the final thing that I'm going to leave you with is, do you want to make a contribution to something where you bring your best to it in the hopes of leaving a lasting legacy? Because some teams do leave a lasting legacy. They don't just expend everything that they've produced on themselves. They actually have enough left to give forward into the next generation. So wherever you are and whatever you're doing, that's my challenge to you. Consider where you can leverage the most effect so that you can be part of a team that leaves a lasting legacy.